Hello and welcome to The Reading Life. This week, we'll be talking with the creators of a fabulous new book, Straight Outta Swampton, Life at the Intersection of Natural and Built Worlds in New Orleans. Woodley Thomas of the Neighborhood Story Project is with us today, along with creative writing teacher Jeremy Roussel of Lake Area and Tech High School, and students Regine Boudreau and Devin LaFrance. We'll also talk with Karen Geiger about the Diana Pinkley Little Free Library, which was recently opened at Ladder, and I'll have some picks for summer reading. Some of my favorite books about New Orleans are the ones from the Neighborhood Story Project. Their motto is Our Stories Told by Us, and they live up to it. Their newest book is Straight Outta Swampton, Life at the Intersection of the Natural and Built Worlds in New Orleans, and it's no exception. It's the result of a wonderful collaboration between the Neighborhood Story Project and teachers and students at the Lake Area and Tech High School. Today, we have the Neighborhood Story Project's Woodleaf Thomas, Lake Area's writing teacher Jeremy Roussel, and two of the student contributors to the book, Regine Boudreau and Devin LaFrance, with us in the studio. Welcome to The Reading Life, y'all.
How you doing?
How you doing?
Great. So, Jeremy, tell us about the origin of this project.
Since I've been teaching at Lake Area, Woodleaf asked if I could go over the creative writing project for him to see what I thought about the project. And he said that he wanted me to do a little bit of taking it over in his stead, since he's going to be working fully for the Neighborhood Story Project. I said, that sounds great. When we did that, he decided to take more of a leadership role in designing the idea or the themes for the book. So he said, you know what? I really think that our students need to tackle this idea of living in a swamp. See, he's not from New Orleans. So his idea was that it's something that's not always present in their minds. It's not something that they always think about. And so he said, I'd like them to really tackle it. And so the beauty of the creative writing project and also working with NSP is that the kids get to experience a lot of the stuff that the book aims to speak about. So we wanted to take them to the swamps. We wanted to take them to the preserves that they just weren't used to. And so it serves as a good teaching tool and as a good thing for them to create and work on.
Woodley, were the other books centered around that kind of theme, like Straight Outta Swampton is, the intersection between the built and natural world? Did you have things like that on the earlier books as well?
No, not at all. This is our first attack at nature. With 2020, it was basically just them looking back at what they think their lives might be like in the next 10 years. It had nothing to do with nature. It was more purely personal and relationships with others, so on and so forth. And then the next one was New Orleans in 19 Movement, which is about students' movements throughout the city, whether it's before versus after Katrina, during Katrina, so on and so forth. Also their families' movements throughout New Orleans. And so you had students explore the neighborhoods they live in and the connections that neighborhood has with the generations of their family or just otherwise.
It's rare to have a family without a move. I mean, that's great.
Exactly. And so it was a great way for kids to explore where they're from and where mm-hmm. their parents are from. You know, they knew where their parents were from, but they knew so little about the neighborhoods. So what they would do is they would interview their parents about how they grew up, where they grew up, and it just cemented their relationship to the city and therefore themselves.
So, Regine, what did you think of the swamp?
Oh my God, it was so much. It was different. I never experienced nothing like that. Even being from New Orleans, I never was able to go to any bayous or anything. So I was just shocked. And I learned something new that day and was able to see something from a different perspective.
The book's divided into three parts, nature and the built world and the intersections. And in the parts about the built world, both of you, Regine and Devin, wrote about people who were very close to you. And Devin, you wrote about your dad's barbershop.
Yes, ma'am.
Would you tell us a little bit about why that place is so important to you?
Well, before I was born, my dad has been a barber, so I've been growing up around a barbershop all my life. So I figured it was basically a good story to write about. I can get deep into it. There's much more that can be told. So many stories going every day there, so it was just a good thing, so I could feel like it related to the community. And everyone at the barbershop really likes it. They want me to write another one.
So you made him famous, right? That's great. I hope you do write another one. And Regine, you wrote a really interesting essay about your grandma and her sweet shop.
Yes, I did. My grandmother, she's not originally from New Orleans, and when she came here, she was able to have a different view of the people, the culture, and everything. So she was able to take where she came from, the country, basically, and put into perspective of how it is, you know, there, and like do it at the shop and kind of install all that in the kids that came there. So basically, that's what she did.
And these are both places that both of you found to be community centers in your neighborhood.
Yes.
You too. That's where life happens, really, don't you think?
Yes. It's very lively.
Now, you've got some great stories about people that are very close to you. And Devin, you wrote about a neighborhood character named Deslon John.
Yes, ma'am.
Why was he so important to you?
Well, as I was younger, I used to hang with my older cousin, and he's Deslon's John's friend. And I just grew up around him, and like so many things about him remind me of New Orleans. So when Mr. Whitleaf asked us to write about someone from New Orleans, he popped up in my head because he also asked that we find how their physical appearance adapts to New Orleans. And John, he's a person, he always had the same type of style. He has tattoos of, you know, New Orleans and where he's from. So I figured he'd be a good resemblance.
And he had a great SUV. Got into it,
yeah,
didn't he?
He still does.
I know. I felt like I could picture him when I was reading your description.
Yeah, everyone at the barbershop calls him Cadillac Slim.
Oh, and Regine, you also tackle one really unpleasant, memorable aspect of post-Katrina life, and that was mold.
Oh my God, the mold. When I started writing, I was like, okay, it's about mold. I don't know how to, you know, get into this and describe it with a lot of detail. So I was just like, okay. And Mr. Thomas was like, I think you can do it. Stick to this. And so when we started, I had to really get in depth with it and visualize everything about the mold. It was hard because the mold was basically like hurricanes that came to New Orleans, and New Orleans was my house.
Right.
So the mold was like the hurricane. It's just destroying everything. And basically, we kept putting bleach on it, you know, to get rid of it. And it's just like down by the river where they have stuff to stop the water from coming. And that's what the bleach was, to stop everything.
Right. Now, Jeremy, you had to corral a lot of creative energy in your classroom for this. So tell us about the process and the timetable and how the writing, the actual writing and bookmaking came to be.
So in the beginning, and these two can attest to it, it's pretty difficult. getting anybody to sit down and put their thoughts on a page can be tough because you always want to first ask the question, what do I write about? What should I think about? So we wanted to make sure that they got at least a lot of those experiences down, like going to places they've never been before, experiencing the world that they are in, you know, the city that they're in, the place that they're wrapped around. So once we got them seeing and looking at it in a personal way, we asked that they put a lot of their personal feelings on the page and then think of their actual worlds, not the swamps, not the stuff that they live in, and say, how does that feel somewhat the same or how does it feel somewhat different? So we got a lot of different responses from that because a lot of them want to say, yeah, one of the reasons why I just didn't want to be out there is because it was hot. But as we digged a little bit deeper and we asked them to prod and get further down into their depths, what was it about the swamp? What was it about everything? We actually touched on something much deeper. And so what you guys would find reading the book is that they touch on things that are latent inside most New Orleanians that they don't want to speak about or that they don't really think about, that's actually just sitting there. And so the book wound up taking on this much deeper theme of their placement within the natural world or their placement within their city. So once we actually planted a few seeds, it actually just grew on its own, basically. It was like its own swamp. Basically, the nature took over in them.
And then Woodleaf came to your class twice a week to work with everybody as well.
Yeah, we co-taught, basically. He would come in and then I would have them, so I was the teacher of record. I spent more time with him, but he spent more editing time. While we both edited the book together along with Abram and Rachel of the Neighborhood Story Project, he worked a little bit more behind the scenes along with Rachel and Abram to make sure that they had the kind of experiences that they wanted to see reflected in the book.
And you took 3 field trips. Where did you go?
We went to the Barataria Preserve, we went to Studio in the Woods, and we went to Grow That Farms out there on the West Bank, which was really nice. It was a really great experience. I recommend anybody go out there. And
did you take all of these in the heat? Or did you?
Yes.
I had a feeling.
One in the rain. One in the rain.
No,
It rained at Grow That. And so we all were like running inside, and you know, it was a few mosquitoes. And so they were in it. They were forced to be in it. And just the kind of writing that they produced while they were in it was just, it was magic.
So, Devin, how has this made you feel differently about your place in New Orleans?
It's made me feel good. As for example, everyone wants me to write another book for the barbershop. Shows me how some of the people who you would have never thought would support you, everyone's asking where can they get the book and all this. And while we were doing the book, my teachers kept talking about how hard it would be getting published by yourself. So that just motivates me to write a book to get published.
Oh, that's great. And what did you learn, Reginae, about yourself as a writer?
I learned so much. I learned to never give up and have confidence about myself more. I wanted to dodge this class for the longest. I was like, okay, I'm going to class. Get ready. So at first, I was just like, we're really writing a book. And I wasn't as serious as, you know, we became more into it with editing it and everything like that. So I was like, okay, I learned so much about New Orleans. I learned so much about the swamps. I learned so much about myself. At the end, I really appreciate everybody that helped us write this book.
Now, you are 2 of the 14 contributors from the class. Did everybody in the class contribute something to the book?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, we've been talking with creative writing teachers Jeremy Roussel and Woodleaf Thomas of the Neighborhood Story Project, and 2 writing students, Reginae Boudreau and Devin LaFrance, who are among the 14 amazing contributors to Straight Outta Swampton. Thanks so much, y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And if you come down, come on down, come on down and look for me. Well, down in the swamp, you know that's where I'll be.
Karen Geiger is one of those New Orleanians that I love because she loves to read. She's always turning me on to great garden books, and she's always on top of things. Last month, we saw the culmination of one of her great ideas, a little free library, to honor our mutual friend Diana Pinkley, who went on to that great reading room in the sky. The Ladder Library Conservancy, which makes that library look so beautiful, took on this effort, and Karen's here to talk about it today. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Susan. The Ladder Library has always been a treasure on St. Charles, and I think with so many people riding the streetcar and whatnot, it's an opportunity for people to be able to get off and see the inside of a beautiful old mansion on St. Charles Avenue. But over the years, of course, the building got a little run down, but mainly the grounds were really shabby. You couldn't even see how much property there was. Everything was so overgrown. So a group of people got together, I guess about 1.5 years ago, and has raised money from private sources and worked with the library staff there, who are fantastic and receptive and open and welcoming. And we have really done a lot of work on the grounds of the library to make it more beautiful, and it's just more attractive in every way, from a distance as well as once you're up in there.
And people walk their dogs there. They bring kids to play there. It has a park-like feeling to me.
Well, it does, and I think it does more and more. Not so much on the dog score.
No, I know.
Let's not open that can of worms.
Pick up after your pets.
Sure. But it really is friendly, and the children's library has always been nice in the library, I think. But to have this little free library outside is, I think, a really kind of unique situation. There are little free libraries nationwide. There are little free libraries in neighborhoods in New Orleans. But I wonder if there are other libraries that have their own little free libraries.
I don't think so. I was looking it up on their website, and I haven't seen any others at libraries. But It's kind of great.
Well, it is. You know, I think that you should have some sort of memorable experience when you go to the library. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a little beachside town. And our library was a decommissioned Coast Guard station. It was a lighthouse.
Oh, wow.
And so it was really fun. I mean, so I grew up going to the library in the lighthouse, which seemed mm-hmm. like a marvelous thing. So I think for children and families and adults to come and sit on a beautiful bench outdoors in this newly created camellia garden, what a nice experience. It doesn't feel at all intimidating. There's nothing daunting about wandering around on this beautiful property and checking out to see what books are in there. And we have gardening books for both children and adults.
Right.
Which is kind of fun.
I know. I put some of the children's books
in there. I know you did, which is
fun.
Great.
Now, for people who don't know, the Little Free Libraries began in 2009 in Wisconsin with two friends, Todd Bowl and Rick Brooks, and it was part of their idea about sustainable living. And so a lot of people describe them as birdhouses for books, which cracks me up. And so they've got a wonderful website, littlefreelibrary.org. And you can go to their website and click on the icon for wherever you live and find a little free library. And the principle is not just to use great materials like recycled crates. A lot of the little free libraries in New Orleans are made out of recycled material. And this one is as well.
Oh, yeah. This is Diana Pinkley and John Pope's old Cypress kitchen cabinet,
and it is
which is really sweet. You know, it's just so apt.
And it's the biggest and the most beautiful of them, I think, but nevertheless. And one of the great things about it is that you don't have to have a card to use a little free library.
Mm-hmm.
The principle is take a book, leave a book. And it's interesting because people are kind of suspicious of that sometimes. They walk up and they think, oh, these books are here for me. It's kind of an odd thing, you know?
Well, the honor system asks a lot of people.
I know.
And I think if you ask it, you get it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you?
Yes.
I mean, I think that people may not always have something with them at the time to put back, but they're going to put something in there.
Yeah, you don't have to put something in there that minute. You can always come back with the book. So how did you decide to make it a garden library?
I guess with the Garden Conservancy Group, which is neighbors and the folks from Landscape Images and some people from the New Orleans Town Gardeners, a lot of civic types. When we talked about putting a little free library out there, which was just kind of a random thought, I thought, wow, wouldn't it be nice to have it about gardening? Because mm-hmm. then you create an awareness. And so many of us who are avid gardeners, you accumulate a lot of books about gardening.
It's addictive.
Well, it is. And sometimes, you know, you go through a phase of like, I've spent years doing moon gardens. I wanted everything to be white and I would just see it at night. That's when I worked all the time, and night was when I got to appreciate the garden. Or then you get on a kick with antique roses. Well, you know, whatever you're interested in, your passions wax and wane. So it's nice to be able to keep maybe the best two gardening books about heirloom plants, but you don't need seven.
I know, but it's good to have a place to give them up, isn't it?
Well, it is. It is. And I think it's just nice. And also, through the Edible Schoolyard and a little after-school program we did before Katrina called the Propagators, that was fun, we found that children of all ages are interested in gardening. It really is a great thing to turn little people onto who get fascinated by butterflies and chrysalises and caterpillars. And then middle school kids like growing vegetables and they like the manual labor. Mm-hmm. I mean, gardening is a really rich, rich subject.
Well, let's keep those books coming to that little free library. Now, this was a cooperative effort. Who else worked on this with you?
Well, the Garden Conservancy for sure, but Marion Mumford and her husband Alan from Landscape Images have done so much of the planning and fundraising for the landscaping the grounds. But also, in terms of turning the actual old kitchen cabinet into a little free library. Karen Kirsting is a lovely woman who has been overseeing construction at John Pope's house, and Portico Construction are the builders, and they loved Diana like we all did, and they contributed this. But the wonderful thing, again, with the Little Free Library website is you can go online, and there are plans for free. How do you waterproof this? How do you build this? You know, it's pretty simple. So it was really a nice effort that everybody just pitched in. It was not a difficult, wrenching experience. It was just happy.
And there was a wonderful christening in May. That was very special.
Fun.
We've been talking with Karen Geiger, who oversees the Little Free Library on Soniette Street in the side yard of Ladder Library. It's the Diana Pinkley Little Free Library. You can check it out anytime, day or night, and you don't need a card. And to find out more about the more than 20 Little Free Libraries in New Orleans, you can go to littlefreelibrary.org. Thanks so much, Karen.
Sure.
The measure of a life is a measure of love and respect. So hard to earn, so easily burned. In the fullness of time, a garden to nurture and protect.
Summer is the time for leisurely reading, for old school thrills. Let's visit two familiar summertime scenes for our first two picks, the amusement park and the summer camp. Stephen King's most recent book takes its title, Joyland, from a North Carolina amusement park where young Devin Jones takes a summer job. He cleans up the rides, does a little maintenance, and, quote, wears the fur, unquote. That's a carny term for donning the costume of the park's canine mascot, all in the delightful name of selling fun. And it's a haunted amusement park, of course. This is a Stephen King novel. Years ago, a young girl named Linda Gray was murdered in the House of Horrors ride, and when one of his co-workers sees her ghost, Devin sets out to solve this mystery. But there's more to his summer than that. He stays on at Joyland through the fall, breaks up with his first love, meets a young wheelchair-bound boy with second sight and a very foxy mother, and learns a lot about himself and what's important in life. Joyland is published by Hard Case Crime Fiction. It's got a great Pulp Fiction cover and a retro look. Not only that, King has foregone an ebook version, hoping that his fans will enjoy the retro thrill of visiting neighborhood bookstores to pick it up. It's a perfect summer tale about a memorable season, a sweet and challenging time in a young man's life, about the strength of first loves and young friendships. Take it to the beach, but watch out for those amusement parks, especially the ones with dark rides. Now, if you have mixed feelings about summer camp, the Yona Lossi Writing Camp for Girls, the much-anticipated debut novel by Anton D. Sclafani, is the book for you. Thea Atwell, raised as a child of privilege in a Florida family, finds herself sent away to a writing camp in the Blue Ridge Mountains after a family tragedy, missing those she loves the most, pining for home, and especially her beloved twin brother Sam. Her exile continues into the fall, much to her disappointment. But what sustains her is her love of horses and her skill in riding, and that is how she integrates herself into the life of the camp's insular society. This novel takes place in 1930, against the backdrop of the Great Depression, and Dee Sclafani skillfully weaves those larger societal changes as they ripple into the lives of the privileged girls at camp. She evokes female friendship and female rivalry in all their fierce intensity, with a clear-eyed sense of just how ruthless girls can be. But what truly captivates the reader is Thea herself, her strong will, her coming of age, her sexual awakening, her sense that she is moving toward a life that she says is full and rich and my own. Even after the tragic events that are finally revealed to the reader, this is truly a summer thrill you'll be sorry to leave behind. And with this extraordinarily beautiful book, Anton D. Sclafani has announced herself as a writer to watch. Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. The West Bank Writers Group meets every Tuesday at 6 p.m. at Barnes & Noble West Bank. Aaron Greenwald signs A Company Man, the remarkable French Atlantic voyage of a clerk for the Company of the Indies, Wednesday, June 12th at 6 p.m. at Maple Street Bookshop on Maple Street. The Horror Reading Group meets Wednesday, June 12th at 7 at Barnes & Noble Metairie. The Women's National Book Association of New Orleans holds a summer networking and meet and greet Thursday, June 13th at 6:30 at La Thai Restaurant on Britannia. For more info, check out the Women's National Book Association of New Orleans Facebook page or email SusanLarson6@yahoo.com. Rosemary Donnelly discusses the cuisine and the philosophy behind Cooking with a Cougar, Thursday, June 13th at 6 at the Lakeshore Branch Library in Metairie. Kim Marie Voss, author of The Baby Dolls, Breaking the Race and Gender Barriers of the New Orleans Mardi Gras Tradition, discusses her book at 7, Thursday, June 13th at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Beasts and Books is a Father's Day picnic, Sunday, June 16th from 12:30 to 4 at the Ashe Cultural Arts Center at 1712 Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard. This culinary book fair and picnic, with food from Cochon and other restaurants, will feature dance and music and kids' activities. It's a fundraiser for the New Orleans Public Library and the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Check out southernfood.org for ticket prices and advance ticket info. Michael Allen Zell again hosts Bloomsday, celebrating the anniversary of that day at the heart of James Joyce's Ulysses, Sunday, June 16th at 2 at the Irish House, 1432 St. Charles. Choose your favorite passage of up to 10 minutes to read and hear guest readers like John Joyce, The Brothers Goat, that's Michael Jeffrey Lee and Christopher Helwig, Vincent Salucci, Pandora Gastelum, Herbert Kearney, and me. And don't forget to encourage the young reader in your life with a trip to the library this summer. Check out NewOrleansPublicLibrary.org for summer reading listings. There's something happening at every branch. The Historic New Orleans Collection with Margaret Media, Pelican Publishing Company, LSU Press, and the University Press of Mississippi will host a summer book festival Saturday, June 22nd from noon to 3:30 at the Historic New Orleans Collection, 533 Royal Street. This will feature a curated selection of new books focusing on Louisiana history and culture. SOLA, the South Louisiana chapter of the Romance Writers of America, is offering a one-day workshop on self-editing with editor and publisher Liz Pelletier of Entangled Publishing, Saturday, June 22nd at Andrea's Restaurant, 3119th Street in Metairie. Registration ends June 10th and includes breakfast, lunch, and the opportunity to pitch your stories. For more information, check out solawriters.org or email Dawn, D-A-W-N, at dawnchartier, C-H-A-R-T-I-E-R, .com. SOLA has also opened the 8th annual Dixie Kane Memorial Contest, begun in 2004 to honor the late SOLA member Linda K. West, who wrote as Dixie Kane. This national competition offers writers the opportunity to have work critiqued by four industry professionals. First place winners in each category will be read by an editor of the Wild Rose Press. The contest is open to published and unpublished writers in the following categories: short, long series contemporary, single title contemporary, historical romance, paranormal, inspirational novel with strong romantic elements, romantic suspense, and erotic romance. Send in the first five pages along with a one-page synopsis of the plot and you're in the race. The deadline for entering is July 15th and there is an entry fee. For more information, go to solawriters.org. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.